But first, to proposals, and you will have heard about this. This has been a great kite-flying exercise by the federal government in this holiday period. The proposal that the federal government might charge bulk billed patients a co-payment, an extra fee when they visit their GP. Now, the idea was contained in a report provided to the government's Commission of Audit. That commission due to report back to government quite quickly at the end of this month in part of the government's deliberations around the coming federal budget. Lots to talk about there, and it's created a lot of discussion in the community. And to discuss the plan this morning, we're joined by Terry Barnes. He's the author of that report that went to the Commission of Audit. And we're also joined by Dr. Brian Morton, who's chair of the AMA Council of General Practitioners. Gentlemen, welcome to you both.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Now, Terry, first to you. Tell us the detail of your proposal.
Well, the brief I was given by the Australian Centre for Health Research Think Tank was to go back and look at the 1991 Hawke government introduction of a GP co-payment of $3.50 and bring it up to date, basically, and have a look at how it might affect access to GP services today and people's use of them. The $6 co-payment that we propose is actually the $3.50 of 1991 indexed to 2013, so it wasn't just plucked out of the air. But unfortunately, in 1991, there was not enough time for the co-payment to work because Paul Keating abolished it as soon as he became Prime Minister.
Well, so, I was going to say, it won't have escaped your notice that it was quickly killed by Paul Keating. What was his thinking about that, and does that suggest to you that it might have problems as well this time around?
Well, I think somebody who always says that he always thought good policy was good politics, he decided that the better politics for him at the time was to do something opposite to Bob Hawke on an unpopular measure. So it quickly died a death when he won the leadership.
What's the problem you're trying to solve with this co-payment?
Well, I think we have a problem overall with the sustainability of our health budget and particularly our Medicare budget. When I first became advisor to a health minister, Michael Waldridge, in 96, our overall national health spend was about $50 billion. Now it's about $150 billion. In terms of access to services and use of services, clearly we have become very comfortable with Medicare as a way of accessing health services, but we don't necessarily ask ourselves questions about the qualitative use of them, and that's not just as a system or as a country, but as individuals as well. And the price signal through a co-payment would actually help people ask the question: do I really need to go to the doctor? Is there other ways that I can treat myself or seek advice?
Because the actual financial benefit here, $750 million over a year, is fairly insignificant against a Medicare budget of about $19 billion.
$750 million over 4 years.
Okay, well, even less significant.
It's still a significant contribution, but taxpayers can't contribute indefinitely at the rate that we are. It's a question of keeping what we have sustainable.
Brian Morton, what do you make of this? Do we need to send a signal to patients to be more judicious in their use of general practitioners?
I think that's a very difficult issue. And we have to look at this report as purely a Treasury report, and so it was in 1991 with the Hawke government. Mm. There's no clinical input. And 20 years have passed, and the impetus for medical care is prevention. And so there's a lot of problem with a co-payment and what it might do in terms of patients seeking help and preventing the illness. I mean, the classic is the chest pain. No, it's okay, I've just hurt my ribs. Well, perhaps it's actually a heart attack, and preventing the heart attack and the consequences therefrom would be a bigger saving over time. So we really need government to look at primary prevention rather than closing the door and cutting back money and stopping people coming to their doctor.
But chest pain is probably an extreme example. I mean, surely, and you'd have a better sense of this with general practitioners than me, but a lot of visits would be at a diminished scale from that. It would be the sort of sniffles and so forth that could not necessarily require a trip to the doctor.
Yes, but it supposes that the health literacy of the community is high. Mm. And studies have shown that it's, you know, about 40 to 50% of people actually understand what's wrong with them. So that we've got an education process rather than a cost imposition process required.
And that education process would involve what?
Well, I think it's increasing the awareness that antibiotics don't kill viruses. You just get over that. Your body helps to fight the infection. Or if you're at high risk, then you have a vaccine to prevent getting the influenza. We've got a lot of lifestyle illnesses happening now. Alcohol, obesity, diabetes, saturated fat, lack of exercise. Those are the things that we need to really make action on rather than penalising patients because they don't properly understand.
Isn't this a point, Terry Barnes, that in a more holistic view of this, that a universal and readily accessible health system is a key to taking those, you know, broader and preventative measures, is a key to monitoring people's weight, things like that? If they're in regular contact with a GP, then there's a good chance that some of those long-term preventative health strategies can be, you know, put into good effect.
I think that's true, Jonathan. But I also take a little issue with Brian on his views on the health literacy of the population. I think we're far more sophisticated and health literate, if you like, because of the massive information now available to us, not to mention Dr. Google, people have a relatively sophisticated understanding of basic problems, including health management, managing risk factors like obesity. I have in the report, as you're no doubt aware, suggested that $6 is roughly the equivalent of a hamburger and chips or a schooner of beer. I'd rather have somebody spend that $6 than going to the doctor than consuming those items.
Have you been surprised by the vigour of the public discussion around this proposal, Terry Barnes?
I wrote an article in The Australian yesterday where I said I feel like I've grown horns and a tail. And I saw a picture of me in, I think, Victoria Mail in Brisbane, basically saying, meet the man who's going to kill free healthcare. So, yeah, I'm a bit burnt by it all, but I think it's a debate that we have to have, Jonathan. I mean, we are looking at high-cost, expensive services that make up our world-class, in fact, our world-leading healthcare system. And I think it's reasonable to invite a conversation about what we can and can't afford, and the way that we consume those services. So whatever you think of my proposal, I think that the debate that has flowed over the last few days, and hopefully will keep going, is actually a good thing for the future of health policy in Australia.
The potential of a co-payment on your Medicare transaction with your GP, that's what we're talking about. Terry Barnes there, author of a report to the Abbott Government's Commission of Audit, and also Dr. Brian Morton, who's chair of the AMA Council of General Practitioners. Brian, this is, as Terry points out, there's a lot to discuss in healthcare. It's a vast part of public expenditure in this country. Are we focusing our conversation in the right directions?
Well, I'm not sure that when governments look at these sorts of big issues, and Terry's absolutely right, we'll be sort of overwhelmed by the cost of health in another 10 to 20 years. But we actually need to get the evidence to show whether or not treasury or monetary changes to the system actually do change patient behaviour. We can't rely on reports of 1970 to 1902. We need contemporary evidence. We need to recognise that the thrust of general practice is now on prevention, not just treating the sniffs and colds or the cuts and scratches. It's actually on prevention of major disease. That's where the cost drivers really are. So we need to get evidence, and we need to balance that monetary policy with health evidence. And there is evidence to show that health literacy is, in fact, very low. So that we need to get that evidence and match it to Terry's suggestion and find out whether health impacts will be great and be counterproductive. Even just the thought of whether patients will then go to emergency departments and what state governments will do. Well, that's there in the policy, but it's one of the counterproductive effects of it. And the other part in Terry's paper is that there'll be no indexation of rebates for Medicare over the next 5 years. There are lots of hidden things in those suggestions that will impact negatively on our system and on the universality and the access and equity of Medicare.
16 after 8. I mean, Terry Barnes, is there evidence that the sort of cost signal you're talking about will affect behaviour?
Well, one of the things that we looked at, in fact, helped model our study was an experiment that was undertaken in the US in the 70s and 80s, the RAND Health Insurance Experiment, which actually put people in groups with levels of copayment from 0 to nearly 100%. And at the lowest level of copayment, they said 25%, there was a dampening of demand, but it became clear that patients were still accessing the healthcare they need, but didn't deter them from going ahead. The level of copayment that we're suggesting compared to the Medicare rebate or for a GP consultation is roughly about 16%, not 25%. So we're fairly confident that there wouldn't be a great there wouldn't be a blocking of people or deterring of people going to the doctor. The other thing, I think, just taking up some of Brian's points there, in the paper we pointed out there were some significant knowledge gaps in terms of the qualitative way that people use GP services. And I think we actually do need to do some more research to actually understand why people go to the doctor, what they expect, and what their relative outcomes were. Because basically Medicare data tells you somebody went to the doctor and Medicare paid for it, and that's clearly not enough to be definitive. So I'm prepared to accept that there's more to be done there.
Does it concern you in any way, Terry Barnes, that this is not your responsibility, but it must be a concern perhaps that in the sort of context of a government looking very hard for simple cuts to budgets, in the context of something like this Commission of Audit, that decisions might be taken around areas like health for all the wrong reasons?
I think the challenge the budget got is the challenge the government has got is a really big one. There is a genuine budget repair job to be done, but I think it's important that changes to the way that we do things are smart and effective. I think, though, that sending a price signal to patients or to consumers of publicly subsidised services is actually an important way of reminding all of us that things come at a cost and that we actually have a responsibility to make sure we use those scarce public resources effectively.
Are we doing the best, Brian Morton, with the resources we have?
No, I think we can do better. And one of those things is maybe looking at how we allocate the resources. At the moment, there's a massive amount spent on secondary and tertiary healthcare with not enough spent on primary healthcare. So we've got to shift from not just lip service to actually transferring that resource allocation to primary healthcare.
Look, it's a complex discussion and one perhaps being unfortunately compressed by the rather short span of this current Commission of Audit, but it should be something which endures, we would hope, beyond that. Thanks to Terry Barnes. He's the author of that report suggesting the Medicare co-payment. And Dr. Brian Morton, who's chair of the AMA Council of General Practitioners.